good.
That's all that's missing. I'm with Roy Shenton, and we're doing this recording up at the Macmillan unit in the Northern General Hospital, because that's where Roy is a volunteer. It's the 18th of November, isn't it, today? 18th of November 2010, and I'm Christine Schimmel, and we're doing the second part of an interview that we started last week. So, Roy, you were telling me about Sid Andrews and the runner beans, the prize-winning runner beans story.
Yes, I'd that had all happened, of course, and time had gone on. Other things had happened. I was still on the beat, pushing the bicycle up to Totley and all round there, doing a country bobby's job in a city. And the sergeant said to me, "Oh, by the way, will you call it?" The Alderman Graham, I think he was. Probably Alderman Graham, as a memory. Well, Alderman Graham. I might have mentioned another name, but I remembered since that it is Alderman Graham. You call it his house because it had some people taking apples off his tree and make it an important job because he's very good to us. So I cycled down Abbey Lane, of course, up to Door Road and called to see him. And it was rather irate, of course, because children had been, obviously from the low edges, somewhere like that. And they had a vast orchard, and they'd probably taken half a dozen apples. Of course, it was a big thing to him. And I suppose it really was a PR exercise, and I'd set it as such. I told him I was just as upset as he was about this intrusion it had into his life. And I said that we would do what we could, and I would tell the other policemen on the beat who would be working on different shifts about this, and we'd keep an eye on this when they were in the area, and we'd try and put a stop to it. And he was rather pleased with this. It seemed to suit what was happening. And he said, "Well, I'm very pleased you've called, officer." He says, "Well, by the way, go and see the gardener. Charles, I think it was, something like that." Anyway, it was an old gardener, been there, obviously, a long, long time. He says, "You've got children, haven't you?" I said, "Yeah, I've got three children." He says, "Well, he'll fill you a carrier bag full up and call for it when you're going off duty, and call for it before you go back to the station. You've got to pass here, or nearly here." "Yeah, all right." So I went down to the garden, vast garden it was, beautifully kept garden, beautiful, big vegetable garden. And in the greenhouse I met the gardener, and he said, "Oh, they sent you down for some bag full of goodies for your family." I said, "Yeah." I said, "What do you want, Denny? Do you want to leave it to me?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, I'll put some tomatoes, spring onions, lettuce, cucumber, I'll fill it up. I know what you want. I've done it before." "Okay." So I was leaving, pushing me back up the path. He said, "Oh, by the way," he says, "I haven't seen Sid for a long while." He says, "What's happened to him?" I said, "Oh, Sid retired 3 or 4 months ago." "Well, isn't that a beggar?" he says. "I thought it was funny he hadn't come for his runner beans." Oh, and I love this story. You know, I thought, I've got to work a beat shift. I've got to work 8 hours before I can impart this knowledge to this station. And of course, when I got back, impart the knowledge to the station, and I presume it had reached Mr. Carnell's ears, because he was the head of CID, as I stated previously, and he wasn't the type of man to take this news very favourably. But of course, he couldn't do anything about it, because Sid was out of his reach. He was a retired man and a man of leisure.
So he'd been cheated all those years, and yet all he took it quite calmly, because he couldn't do anything about it.
He took it as... I didn't tell him, but of course I was the messenger. I wanted to get this station, knowing this. It was as good as... better than anything to be on the wireless that day, because everybody knew about Sid having won this competition for the 17th time this year. And all the time, all this explaining about how to keep them straight and long and all like that, to everybody who was even if they were too bored, they got to listen to this wonderful story. So it was a conclusion to quite a little bit of history at Woodseats Police Station.
Yes. Now, you were also telling me, Roy, about the footballer story, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I told you that when we used to go from Door and Totley and cover that area, and this particular day I was on the Totley side. And I'd been up from Totley, and of course I'd gone to Totley Box, and I thought, I've half an hour, can I make it in half an hour up to Fox House, to the St John's Ambulance Station, which was a box on which our box key to the police box was fitted. I mean, of course, we've got to make that, if at all possible, to try and work it in our beat during the 8-hour period. So I thought, yes, I could go up there. But of course, by this time, I would be on the motorcycle at this time. We converted to motorcycles. Of course, I remember my first motorcycle, the Silent Velocette, the 200cc. One covered Door, one covered Totley, then we changed over alternate weeks. I even remember the registration number of that vehicle, TWB 995. And I was allowed to take this home with me because I got a hut at the bottom of my garden and it was suitable to keep that there. And when I started my shift, wonderful, no bus fares, anything. And I could ride my cycle up to the police station, get it filled with petrol, and I was a free man there because we got no radios on the on those motorcycles. And of course I got a free period at half an hour to traverse the roads and go into all the nooks and crannies. And this is how I think I made my pathway clearer to the CID and to be a detective, which was my ambition, because with movement and following things up and getting the information from mixing in the people, because I was getting to know the people of Totley quite well, in particular, more so than the Door people, and the information you get from there, I used it as Sid Andrews was used it as a country beat, and people told you things. And I used that information. I had quite a few good arrests around the Totley area. So I knew if I kept my nose clean that probably I wouldn't be long before my ambition would be realised. So I went up to Totley. Nothing doing for me. There were no messages for me. So I was more or less free for another half hour. And I think I'd tell them I'd ring next at Beechiff, rather than ring at the Totley box. And I was going down Addersage Road, and I thought it was peculiar, at the where Sheep Hills box, the big one there, at the end of Sheep Hills Road, near the Clarion House, that was a particularly big box, because bigger than any other one in the city. It was rather unique, and I wonder if, historically, that should have been kept. Part of the history of Sheffield, that, because it was one where you could wheel the bike into the box itself and close the door. And of course it was kept dry if you had a meal there. And it was a lovely place to have a meal, that particular box, because you could open the door on a summer evening, you could receive right across the field.
So there couldn't have been much traffic along that road, because it's a roaring
road. No, only very little traffic. You see, we're going back to a peculiar time, really. I'm glad you brought it up about traffic, because I've just realised now, when we're working beats, particularly on the foot beat, on the cycle beat, we had to report to the station any unusual motor vehicle that was parked on our beat. Yeah, just imagine that. But it was very important you took it seriously, because if a housebreaking or some crime, theft, occurred on your beat, the first thing that the CID would do the following morning, if you had been on nights or afternoons, would be to look what unusual cars were on his beat. And just compare that. What happens today? You'd be lucky to find a space. This time, you recognise cars which weren't familiar to you, and you took the registration number. And it wouldn't be the first time if a detection had arose because you'd taken the number of
a car that you weren't usually seeing.
That I wasn't normally used to seeing.
Wow. Yes, that's just a bizarre idea now.
Haven't we gone a long way since then? Mm. That was motor vehicle and traffic in its infancy. That was the time, of course, when the AA man would even stand at Fox House and salute me. As a policeman, of course, we were friends. We'd salute me. Now, those days when the AA man with his motorbike and sidecar would look at your badge on the front of your car, of course, and give you a salute. Yeah, I'd made my call as I was going to make my way down to Beechiff, and as I was passing the Sheeple's box, I noticed that there was a car parked well up from the roadway on Sheeple's Road. Rather an unusual position, I thought. Well, it could be a courting couple, it could be a stolen car, it could be anything. I'd better check on it. So I went up to the up the pathway. I could get up on my bike. It'd probably be about 300 yards from the roadway. And as I got there, of course, there's a lady and a gentleman on the back seat, cavorting or, well, thoroughly enjoying themselves. And the gentleman wasn't facing me, but when he turned his head, I recognised him. It was Jimmy Hagan, the Sheffield United inside forward, who an international footballer, who played for England. And my hero, as a Sheffield United supporter, of course, was Jimmy Hagan, and many other people in the Totley and Doher part of Sheffield. And I told him that I was just checking to see if the car was a stolen car or what the car was doing here. And I left him at that. I wasn't being nosy, I didn't want to find him in that situation, but I left him there. But of course, once again, it was a bit of news to take back to Woodseats Police Station. What a life we led, didn't we? And of course, when I got back there, I saw the Inspector Andy Corby, and I told him what had happened, or he was there when I was telling the sergeant in the office what had happened. He said, "I wish I'd known that," he says, "before, during the past hour," he says, "I've just been making my football coupon up." He says, "And they're playing Aston Villa on Saturday. I wonder what I'd have put if I'd have known about this." Anyway, I had no need to have bothered, because United that day, I remember particularly well, because I went to see the match, and I went to see Jimmy Hagan perform, in inverted commas, in a different way to what I'd seen him on the Thursday. And he scored a hat-trick in the first half, and Sheffield United beat Aston Villa 5-2 that day.
So what year was that? Do you remember?
It would be before 1954, because in 1954 I passed my exams and I went into CID, but I was still working the motorcycle beat. I did that for 2 years. Right. So I would say between 52 and 54.
Right.
But what a wonderful, never mind anything else, Jimmy Hagan was my idol and everybody else's idol. And I think if this story is related in many, many years to come, people will still know about Jimmy Hagan.
Thank you, Roy. That's great.
Probably could be better with thinking about it.